everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. We got a little sprinkle of rain. Some places in town had a little bit more than we did, but hey, we'll take it. Looks like the final hurrah for the summer rainy season as we transition into autumn here. It is Monday, September the 16th, 2024. We're in our, well, we begin our 15th year with the radio project and our 37th year involved in the Tucson radio and television scene. Coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, we have five radio stations under one roof. It's all part of Bustos Media. This one's 1030 KVOI The Voice. Have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, which is also the place for all of our podcasts going back to when we launched our radio project the first week of January back in 2011. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On Monday, we get things going with something we call the Monday One-on-One, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls. Moe is a fantastic photographer, and his work is on display at the gallery. And, of course, they do wonderful picture framing. And if you want Moe to come out to your house and put the project, what he has framed, up on the wall for you, he'll make a house call. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Our Monday one-on-one guest, a familiar guest of this program, and one of our more popular guests, Dr. Albrecht Clausen, renowned scholar of medieval history, and University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies. His resume is incredible and seems to be increasing every day. He's published 130 scholarly books, hundreds of articles and book reviews, along with a dozen volumes of poetry. He's got four volumes of essays, textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. He's won so many awards, including the very prestigious Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions in recognition of outstanding services to German studies. He is very busy, along with his teaching. Of course, he's editor-in-chief of the international online journal, Humanities. His most recent book is titled Nature in the Middle Ages and Early Modern Times, an exploration of a critical relationship. In fall of 2022, he spent a very interesting semester in Cairo, Egypt, as a Fulbright scholar. Always a pleasure, Doctor, to have you with us on the program.
Thank you so much, Bill. It's always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
There's just so much hate in the country right now. It seems like half the country hates the other half, and here we had another apparent assassination attempt on former President Trump over the weekend. How in the world are we going to build these bridges between these political parties? Where's the human in the humanities and all of this?
Well, this is the perennial question. How do we build better relationships between or among people? But the humanities are particularly geared toward that goal. We are teaching courses that address human perspectives, very fundamental issues such as love, but also hatred, and explore those issues through a very unique lens, namely mostly, let's say, literary texts. Could also be movies, could be video games and artworks or music, but we're studying the human existence with all of its problematic natures. I mean, we have talked lots of times about that, the seven deadly sins, the notion of pride, the notion of anger, the notion of selfishness, gluttony, lust, sloth, and so forth. Things like those do not seem to go away, and this is what we constantly need to work with. I'm very blessed. I have a huge class of freshman students, and I'm very happy just to address these fundamental issues while we are then exploring the topic of love.
This conspiracy theory thing is relatively new to our political campaigns, but now it's become just so ingrained in the campaign.
Well, because it's a lack of respect. It's a lack of respect for the other human being and unwillingness to listen And one of the key components I always try to tell, particularly our male students, is that one of the best skills you can ever acquire in human life is to listen. That is a key component of communication, not talking. Many people talk a lot, but the more they talk, the less they listen. But this is really a key component, in my opinion, and that's what we observe then in many or countless literary texts that address really this need, how to listen, how to work on a community, how to reach out, how to develop compromises, collaboration, commitment, and compassion.
Why is conspiracy theory attractive to so many people? And I guess it's not a new deal, is it? It could even go back to your area of expertise, to the Middle Ages.
That's right. But let's just focus on the highlights, sort of the negative side, namely the Holocaust, the Nazi regime. Think about Stalin. Think even today, about Putin, who works with the same mechanisms, and our former president operating with the same slogans, keywords, making just a binary world, me and them, us versus them, whereas it's always a mixed situation. And we just talked about it. We have a country, we are a country of immigrants. We have people, the best people in our country, they come from all over the world.
Yeah, what happened to that American story about the immigrants?
Yeah, that's right.
And one thing that's not being talked about a lot, the Haitian immigrants, didn't all of a sudden 15,000 of them descend on Springfield, Ohio overnight? Many of these people own restaurants, businesses, have been there for 10, 15 years.
And that pertains to many other sort of minorities who were born here, whether, you know, I mean, there are lots of different minorities. And it doesn't matter to me. Give these people an education and they will become a worthy member of our society and will be very productive for our society. So this is hate mongering. This is the most dangerous thing in our existence. And of course, I believe that in the humanities, we are really trying to fight against that by educating our students to have an open mind, to read, to listen, to be aware of cultural differences. And allow me to add, that's why we also teaching foreign languages, because once you study a foreign language, you are also keenly interested in a foreign culture, and that means in people.
I want to talk a little bit about, you just reviewed a new book that is doing very well, actually. The chair of the Medieval History Department at the University of Mannheim in Germany is out with a book called The Green Ages, Medieval Innovations in Sustainability. What did you think of the book? It's the popular press has really picked up on this book, and I guess when you put green in the title, It's very contemporary.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I was delighted. I was very curious to see this book. I read it, and then I've written a review, which is sort of mixed because, on the one hand, I have to admit, this is a fantastic spokesperson for our field, arguing that there are various models of life that could be attractive for us as well. But then also, of course, I'm a critical reader. I noticed a lot of shortcomings, a lot of naivety, sort of idealizing monastic communities as if those were then in the ideal models for us. No one's going back to monastery today unless you're a very religious person. Talking about sustainability in terms of recycling, wonderful, yes, sure. But do we not do already recycling for decades? And we are at the limit of what we can do. So it is a popular book. It's written really well. I like their whole idea. I support the author in her effort to inject a sense of respect for medieval models or past models. But just in practical, concrete terms, there are a lot of shortcomings and superficialities.
Annette, how is the last name?
Kainer. Annette Kainer, yes.
Yeah, and she's really garnering a lot of attention with this book, The Green Ages, Medieval Innovations in Sustainability. You mentioned monasteries. You've got actually a talk coming up on Wednesday.
Yep.
Was the monastic life a realistic possibility of people to take that path in the Middle Ages?
This is a very interesting question. Yeah. But it also is predicated on a certain difficult. We do not understand what a monastery really was about. You could not simply enter a monastery. You had to go through really a long series of tough
But in
tests.
The movies and TV, it's like, knock on the door. I've got nowhere yes. else to go.
No.
May I become a member of your community?
Yes.
But it sounds like you're saying there was a whole vetting process.
Absolutely. A year, at least several years of vetting.
Really?
Because they had to find out whether you had the inner spirituality, the physical strength to sustain the harsh life. Keep in mind, when you're a monk, you have to pray six times during a 24-hour period. So
really?
You never sleep, really.
Six times?
Six times. That means you pray at midnight, you pray at 3 o'clock, you pray at 6 a.m., you pray at 9 a.m., and so forth.
Dr. Albrecht Clausen from the University of Arizona, Fulbright Scholar, is our Monday one-on-one guest. We're going to pause right here, pick up a little bit on that about his upcoming talk, The Medieval Monastery, Spiritual, Artistic, and Economic Utopias. We'll tell you about that and more when we continue. It's the Monday one-on-one presented by our friends at Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Monday one-on-one, presented by Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing. Fort Lowell, very conveniently located, and the Mohs is right next to Copenhagen, so easy to find. We continue now with our Monday one-on-one guest, Dr. Albrecht Clausen from the University of Arizona, where he's a distinguished professor. He's a Fulbright Scholar, Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions, and he has a very interesting talk that's coming up. I think it's over at Himmel Park part of the public Pima County Public Library System, which will be our topic with the director of the library system at 12:30. You're going to be talking about the medieval monasteries, spiritual, artistic, and economic utopias. That's Wednesday, October the 9th from 5:30 to 6:30. Yep. So you can't just show up at a monastery and be welcomed in. That's not the protocol.
No, not at all. I mean, depends, of course, on the individual orders, but in most cases, the new members were first novices. Then they had to go through a very severe test, a period of tests, and only if they mastered them, let's say, also the basic Latin scholarship, scholasticism, and then the spiritual attitude and humbleness and the physical strength, really, to maintain such a life.
Was there an economic engine to this? In the Middle Ages, were they part of the community?
This is an interesting question, because when you wonder why, for example, the Benedictines became so powerful and influential, they used a very intriguing system. Namely, they became basically the caretakers of older people. A lot of older people who could no longer run their own estate said, okay, take care of us, and then after our death, you take over our farm. So this was a very convenient system. So the Benedictines very quickly acquired huge estates all over Europe. It's always the same with these monastic orders. They all sort of committed to austerity and purity. But in a short period of time, they attract so many riches that then their own values find themselves.
So you take a very rich landowner who is failing in health, maybe doesn't have any heirs.
Yeah.
He or she, I guess, could turn to the monastic order, and the order would say, well, we will take care of you until your death, and then upon your death, your property and your assets go to us.
Exactly.
So they accumulated all this wealth.
Correctly. And because the monastery, or let's say the members of the monasteries, did not have children, so they did not divvy up their inheritance. Hence, a monastery, by default, grew and grew and grew.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, let's say, if you think about the Cistercians, this is another kind of a Benedictine convent order, they settled in remote areas and cleared the lands, and they had the most fertile lands then and became the greatest and biggest landowners. Very interesting.
But much of our pre-modern science, theology, and the arts developed at the monastery.
Exactly, because those were the centers of learning. They had the hospitals, they had their monastic gardens where they grew the herbs for their pharmaceutical needs, and they had, of course, in the library, they had arts workshops, they had trained their architects, they had their own mathematicians, they had their economists, they had their managers. So a whole economic unit just working just by itself.
But how did they fit into the political structure?
Well, they tried to live
away. They tried
away.
To stay neutral?
Well, they were obedient to the Pope, but mostly they tried to live by themselves. They formed large networks. So let's say you were a monk in Norway and you had connections to monks in England. From there, you had connections to Poland, Lithuania, Austria, and so forth. So they had kind of a system by themselves.
Well, and people hear about a cloister. Is that the same as the monastery?
This is the key component why I started offering the talk, because I realized there are a lot of misunderstandings what a monastery really is all about. And we think of the cloister in New York and assume that is the center of the monastery. Or it is a monastery. That's completely wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just a place for monks to walk around, read, and meditate.
Yeah, there's still monasteries all over the world?
Yeah, there are many Benedictines, Cistercians, Franciscans.
We had a Benedictine monastery right over at Country Club.
Country Club in South of Speedway, which is now, unfortunately, an apartment complex.
The nuns couldn't keep it up.
Not enough young people willing to join. That is, of course, a problem.
Again, that is coming up on Wednesday, October the 9th. And that will be from 5:30 to 6:30, Himmel Park, the Pima County Public Library, and that is a free talk.
Completely free. This is a public service. I enjoy doing this. And if there's interest in the community, I would be happy to answer any question people might have.
You've started a new school year. You say your students are very enthusiastic. And you talked about countering the hate. And on the other side of the 180 degrees is something called love. You're trying to, is that kind of a theme this year with you?
Well, I have always been very deeply interested in the topic of love because that was the most important topic in medieval courtly culture. I find it intriguing that these young people, I have about 105 or so freshmen, and I do not notice any form of hatred. This is a very mixed group of people.
You're saying it's a very diverse class.
Very diverse class from all kinds of backgrounds. And yet we all seem to agree on basic aspects. We have talked about the seven C's: communication, commitment, compromise, coordination, collaboration, compassion, courage, and care. And they seem to accept that. It is a logical component. They are searching for something. Basically, the humanities are there to answer the question, where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm. And often in universities, though, sometimes look at the humanities as a place that maybe could be made, financial cuts.
Because we seem to be the easiest victim.
Why are you the easy target?
Yeah, well, because we don't draw so much money. We don't have grants for several million dollars here left and right. So we are rather cost money because we educate students. We need books, but we don't cost really that much. We don't have laboratories or anything of that sort. But we are teaching our students in the really basics, the essential components, how to communicate, how to understand other cultures, how to develop into global citizens, and thereby to combat hatred.
How much is social media driving the hatred?
That's hard to say, but I'm afraid that
what's your gut feeling on that?
I think it has a lot to do with the public media, with the social media, because everyone can spout forth anything he or she is thinking without any control, any fact-checking. I mean, this is just bonkers nowadays, what is happening there.
All right. We've still got a couple of minutes left, and I want to talk a little bit about your online journal. How is that going, the online journal Humanities?
This is a fantastic operation because it is very international. We get a lot of submissions from China, India, and many different African countries. And we have the opportunity to develop new perspectives, whether it's gender issue, we call it eco-poetry or eco-criticism, namely using literary texts to explore our environment and what we can do about it, raising sensitivities and awareness. So this becomes a much more global platform. We'll be moving away from narrow disciplinary boundaries to very interdisciplinary, open, humanistic perspectives, which, in my opinion, is one of the best new ways for the future.
Can anyone take a look at the journal?
It's all open. Mm-hmm. Anyone can read or download any article. The only problem is that we, as authors, we have to pay for the publications unless you get a waiver. But that's, of course, costs. There are huge costs involved, and somehow the journal needs to retrieve those costs. But that pertains only to the authors, not to the readers. So you can simply go online and read thousands of articles, all free.
And could anyone post an article, or do you have to have that vetted?
It's very much vetted. Yeah. It is a highly peer-reviewed journal of the highest scholarly standard. I'm very proud of that. I've tried it myself. I've published a number of articles, and I had to sweat through this. Very tough. A lot of criticism came through, and it was very welcoming, this criticism. That's the highest standard, so I'm very happy about it.
All right, Dr. Albrecht Clausen can be followed. You've got a very active Facebook page, and I noticed that you put something about dogs.
Yeah.
It's not really that funny, but I guess, you know, about what's been going on in Springfield, Ohio, but you said that the dogs actually were pretty revered back in medieval times.
Absolutely. either as pet dogs or
pet dogs,
as hunting dogs or as companions or as mysteries that knew better or knew the trail and so forth, as warnings. about the dangerous paths one could take. We will pursue that. I have another conference coming up, and then a volume where we focus on horses. So in other words, the interaction between humans and animals is a very fundamental component.
All right, Dr. Albert Claussen, always a pleasure to have you on our program.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Our Monday one-on-one presented by Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing. I was just over there a week or so ago and dropped off an item that I would like to have done very professionally, and that's the way they do it over at Mohs. But not only do they do the picture framing, they also have wonderful custom frame mirrors for your home. I have a couple of them in my home, and they do just a great job. And of course, Mo will make a house call if you want to make sure it goes up on the wall just the way you want it. Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and now Monsoon Chocolate is one of their neighbors over in that not a new shopping center, but the new business is Monsoon. I just gave them a free plug. Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing, and their website, mohsgallery.com. We'll be right back. Family-owned and run since 1985, Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at mohsgallery.com.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, off and running now on this Monday. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios, Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site, everything you could imagine for your garden and accessories as well. That's part of the Zocalo Village. Beautiful imported items, not just for the garden, but they have some dining room sets handcrafted out of all different woods like mesquite. So it's a great operation run by my friends Jan and Jack. And stop by. They're open every day. 3384 East River Road, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They've been in business over 53 years. All right, let's transition. By the way, when we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Amber Mathewson is the executive director of the Pima County Library System, which consists of 27 physical library locations and one virtual library. And out of over 1 million residents, 283,000 people have library cards, so a lot of people love the library. Amber, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
When this news came out about an overhaul or at least a look at the future of our Pima County Library, you had a lot of response, didn't you?
We sure did, but that actually was very heartening to me to know that so many people still love and appreciate the library.
So how did all of this come about that maybe this would be a time to take a look at where we are with the system?
Since the pandemic, we've been struggling with staffing. We had 80 vacancies over our 27 libraries when we came out of the pandemic, and we've been doing a lot of hiring and trying to get back to where we were before, but we still have our on the books about 43 vacancies. And so we started looking at how we could maximize our service with the staff that we currently have and what that might look like going into the future. So we took the past year really looking at all of the different parts of our statistics. So looking at how people are using our libraries, how they're using the materials, and started to come up with some things that might help us to serve the most people with the resources that we have at this time.
Is funding an issue? I know the primary source of course for the library system is property taxes. So is funding an issue?
Funding is not really.
It sounds like it's more maybe of a stat trying to get enough people.
It's really trying to keep the number of people. The Board of Supervisors have always been very supportive of the library, and right now our operating budget is a little over $56 million. That doesn't include the capital improvement project funds. So funding-wise, we've got it. It's just a matter of being able to have enough staff to keep the doors open.
What is the issue that is it pay that is discouraging people from becoming a librarian, or are there some other issues?
There's quite a few issues, actually. One is that librarians, like teachers, are lower paid. And so, unfortunately, if you've put out the money that it takes to earn a master's degree. You might take many, many years to be able to pay off the investment that you made in that. So that's one piece of it. Another is that there are so many vacancies nationwide that there's a lot of opportunity for folks to move around, whereas I've been with the library system for 33 years, but that's not the trend anymore for people. They may stay in a job for 2 years. If they don't receive a promotion, might then start looking for positions in other states. Also, the pandemic made for a lot of life changes for people. Folks are looking for jobs where they might be able to work from home, which is difficult for us when we're trying to keep public spaces open. So there are, it's multifaceted with regard to the pay. We did, the county did do a salary study, which gave us some increase in wages. But even so, it's been hard to keep pace with the number of people coming and going.
The cost of running the library, of course, there's all sorts of issues. As a building ages, you've got electrical issues, water issues. Is that playing into this?
Well, specifically for the main library, which is one of the buildings that folks have been really curious about, it is a leased building, so it's owned by the city of Tucson. So we work between the city and county on who pays for which pieces, but there are some really large infrastructure pieces of that, which a complete upgrade and renovation has been estimated to be $90 million. So our thought was, is that really the best way to spend tax dollars? Could we do better with a smaller building, downsized a bit, still in the downtown area, but then that would allow us to have less staff, because with a multi-story building, even just for safety and security, you have to have more staff. So having one level would be one way to have more staff to put out into other branches and then also still serve the community downtown.
Amber Mathewson is with us from the Pima County Library System. It's an interesting relationship between the city and county. It's almost a unique relationship with that downtown library, isn't it?
Well, we've always been a city-county library system, but in 2006, all of the staff came over to the county, and we became fully funded through the library district tax, because the county is the holder of that. Mm-hmm. But many of our buildings were and still are owned by the city. There's an agreement that once we've made more than 50% of the cost of the building in improvements, then it reverts to the county. The main library just happens to be unique in the size and cost.
What would happen to that building?
Well, that would be something that the city and county have to determine. If it's something that they wanted to...
It's a pretty good size building, right?
To renovate that building. Yeah. It could be renovated for multi-purpose. Uh-huh. It could even be that if it was decided by both entities, the library could be a portion of that building and maybe have other joint use in that area. Some cities have had some luck with having a first floor library, and then floors above might be either retail or housing. So there are lots of options and opportunities, and we don't know the eventuality of that at this point.
But it is possible that the library could be kind of fixed up and maybe become one level for the library, and then something else utilized on the second level.
Absolutely. Yeah, and probably we would need to find if that were to be the result, we might need to find an interim location while the renovations were happening, and that would be possible as well.
Before we take the break, Amber, let's talk about some of the other items, proposed changes. First of all, I do want to mention the library that had been closed for nearly 2 years for renovation will be opening tomorrow. That is the Martha Cooper Library.
It more than doubled in size, and it is beautiful. I encourage anyone, even if it's not the library in your neighborhood, to go down and visit. We're so excited for the community to see that as it opens tomorrow.
Why don't we take the break right here, and then when we come back, we'll talk about some of these other proposed changes. We talked about the downtown library. There's some other proposed changes that Amber can fill us in on what's going on there. It's the Buckmaster Show on Monday. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. 2006. Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan, half-cent sales tax. They're both effective through June 30th, 2026. The region to receive continued funding for another 20 years. RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. Receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development. Visit rtanext.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion is presented by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We send so many of our listeners over to that beautiful area, the southwest portion of the Land of Enchantment. It's a perfect time of year as we transition out of summer into autumn. Autumn in the Land of Enchantment, well, it's great over there. Check it out. 3-hour drive approximately. There's all sorts of information at southwestnewmexico.org. Start your planning now for a early autumn getaway to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Amber Mathewson is the director of the Pima County Library System, 27 physical library locations, one virtual location, and Amber and her team put out a report about how do we move forward and kind of bringing the libraries into the maybe 21st century, I think it's safe to say. The overall concept of libraries, some might say, is kind of an 18th century concept. How have the libraries adapted, Amber?
Well, as you know, people are really using a lot of electronic resources. And so much of our funding, in fact, at least 50%, well, actually a little bit more than 50% of our users were utilizing electronic resources over physical. And then our collection budget, while this year is still about a little over half of our collections budget is spent on physical materials. We expect that in the next year that will be overtaken by electronic. So what that means is that in many cases, fewer people are coming into branches because they can use library resources without coming in. On the other side of that, we do have individuals who need to connect to the internet, want to make community connections, have programming, and all of those things. And so trying to balance out the budget and staff availability for those is what we're really looking at, is what's the good balance where we can have within a region all of the services that someone wants, but maybe not every service is at every library. So we're really trying to take a regional approach as we look for to the future.
And security, while we're talking about money, you got to pay security guards too.
Yeah, we're poised to spend $1 million on security this year.
$1 million on security. Whoa.
And that's both security guards and then off-duty officers. And that's one of the changes that we have seen in libraries, which also makes it difficult for staff, is that often people see libraries as a quiet place, an easy job where mm-hmm. you go, but not realizing the things that come with when there are not places for unhoused people to go except the library, or folks who are suffering from mental illness or just have high needs in whatever way, that really comes to the library staff to kind of bridge the gap in the community oftentimes.
In the report, you talked about proposed changes, closing the Dewhurst Catalina Library branch at the end of 2024, Santa Rosa Library again end of 2024, and then the Frank de la Cruz El Pueblo Library again at the end of 24. These are not hard, fast numbers, correct?
No, we don't expect anything to happen in this calendar year. We need to be talking more with the community, getting feedback to get a better idea. We know by the numbers how people are using our libraries, but we also need to hear from people
mm-hmm. About what they want.
About what they want.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's where our next steps are. So the dates are not hard and fast, and the libraries are not hard and fast either. Those are what we came up with the best guess. And in places where we could, for instance, the Catalina Library has a community center that's very proximate, which is a county facility that we think we could do partnering with to provide programming and possibly even book lockers for people to check out. So we would still have some service in that area. Similarly, the Santa Rosa Library has a community center quite proximate to it as well. And then El Pueblo, we feel like that would be a great place for us to really take our outreach services there and really blanket that community with services anywhere that we can plug in, whether that's daycare centers or senior centers or even parks.
And of course, the Pima County Board of Supervisors has the ultimate control over the library. So after this draft process, you're going to hear from a lot of people. Ultimately, it will be their decision on what happens.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about getting back to trying to hire more people. I know the county and Jan Lesher, they've had some job fairs. Does that also include, is there a library component, do you know, in the job fairs that they've had?
We have participated in some, but not all of them, but we will be participating in the next one coming up. We tend to get quite a few people applying for positions, but then We're not always successful in getting them hired.
Because they have to be vetted, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So the other communities, I know you're in touch with, you're a part of an association, mm-hmm. right, of national, a national group. How are other communities dealing with this? Are they also looking at closures or consolidations?
Lots of
so
libraries.
So this isn't unique
sure.
to Tucson,
it's
right?
It's not unique. Yeah. I think that a lot of them are doing some consolidation. I haven't heard of too many physical library closures, but I have heard of downsizing of main libraries and the idea of trying to do more services outside in the community as well.
So when you look at your budget issues, you mentioned, of course, the hiring, but you also have to address the rising costs of actually acquiring, right, print and physical books and materials.
Absolutely.
I mean, this doesn't come free.
Right. Yeah, and even the print materials, a book that used to cost $24 is usually about $48, a physical book. A digital copy of that could be $85, and different digital platforms have different cost structures. So some of the books, like in our Overdrive library, we technically own those titles. In other platforms, we're renting access to the service, and we have pay for use. So the digital rights management of print materials is much different than that for music. Music generally, for instance, our downloadable music that we have, we are able to access the whole Sony Records catalog, for instance, but that's not the case for publishers.
What about the health concerns? I know many libraries across the country have turned their libraries into wellness centers. Is that something you're looking at?
So back in 2012, we started a program which is called the Library Nurse Program, where we provided some funding to the health department so that we had community health nurse at the library about 40 hours a week, and started out at the main library, and then we subsequently divided that time, so it was to several of our libraries. But unfortunately, the health department has needed their nurses for everything else, so we haven't been able to do that. So one of the things that we've been trying to do is just partner with other agencies. So right now, El Rio Health does do some work in some of our libraries, and we think that that's where our strength in that area will be, not only partnering with the Pima County Health Department, but other health agencies as well, even behavioral health.
I mean, a good place for somebody, older people, check the blood pressure and do a wellness check.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And in some of our locations, we have had that. Mm-hmm. The health department has some community health workers that are going out. Similarly, we partner with the community and workforce development. Some of their community workers are out and help to connect people to services as well.
All right. Before we go, where can people find out more if there's somebody listening and they'd like to apply to be a librarian?
Sure. Library.pima.gov is our website, and just look for the jobs. Mm-hmm. Also on the Pima County job site, our link actually takes you there. So library.pima.gov is the easiest.
And for input on the draft proposals, same place to leave comments? Or,
sure. Yeah. There is, on our website, library.pima.gov, there is a Ask a Librarian, but that also allows you just to put in comments. So that's a good place as well. And if you want to reach out to the Library Advisory Board directly, that's library.board@pima.gov.
All right, Amber Mathewson. Thank you, Amber, for coming in and giving us the latest with the Pima County Libraries.
Thank you so much, Phil. It's great to talk to you.
Nice talking with you. That's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. Off and running on a Monday on behalf of Amber and John on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show. Bill here wishing everybody well.